Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, currently in a homestand at PNC Arena, and a big win last night with a huge third period, head coach Rod Brindamore. Congrats on the win last night. That third period was something to behold.
Well, that was a tough game. You know, they're obviously, you know, great team, and, you know, we had our moments there for sure, but I thought the guys just played really a 60-minute solid effort and got a couple bounces, which was nice to see, and they're coming away with a couple points.
Well, the story of the game outside of the win is Jordan Staal. What is that? Game number 1,000. And I know you've said this in the past, that Jordan is playing Jordan's game, just that there's goals that are happening with it. But I can't shake the idea that it goes beyond just the goals. I feel like he's making these crucial goals, like the goals you desperately need when you need them to keep this season going.
Well, I mean, he's had some big games, like you said, contributing on the score sheet at big times. But I don't know. I have a hard time. I don't see really a lot of difference in his play. I mean, I think he's just getting rewarded, and obviously he's coming in at big times, like you said, which we obviously need. And I think it's a huge reason why, you know, we are where we are in the standings.
Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, joining us here. On the OG, that's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. All right, Rod, I'm going to set myself a bear trap here, but I'm dying for your insight here. What do you believe is the coach's role?
Oof. You're just ending right there?
Yeah. See,
conversation.
I know, but here's the thing.
You guys want? You got no questions then? You want me to fill this whole
no,
time?
No.
Okay. I've been sparring with people on Twitter, and you're the first coach.
Hold on a second. He's been arguing with Adam Gold about the national championship game in college, and I think Giglio's trying to prove a point. I'm just adding context here. You may continue, Giglio.
I believe he's actually going to prove Adam's point, but you're the first coach I've actually had a chance to have this conversation with or ask this question to.
Right.
And it's obviously an overarching one and maybe one you can only put into two sentences, but how do you view your role as the coach in terms of either motivating your players, or do you strictly think of, oh my gosh, I need to make sure we have the right play off of a face-off?
Right.
Or,
right.
You know, we've seen you. Yeah, but we've seen you also give some pretty good short and effective speeches too that I'm sure you've put a little bit of time in too. So
I think, well, it's all of it. That's the problem. It's a question we could talk forever. I think the role at the end of the day is get your players prepared to be their best and play their best. I mean, that's the end of the story. And then, you know, how you go about that, there's a million different things that go on in what your role is. But at the end of the day, you're trying to take your team, give them the best chance to win by preparing them and then getting them ready to go show their stuff. I mean, that's, I guess, it in a nutshell.
If your team plays poorly, do you ever say to yourself, that was my fault? I didn't have them ready to play?
Yeah. Well, you do. And that's part of why I always say, man, I don't know how long I can do this. Because, you know, when I played, I worried about my mistakes. And then, you know, that was enough not to sleep. But when you coach, you worry about 20 guys' mistakes. Because you're like, well, obviously, that's on me, too. So you do take a lot of ownership of it. But I think the good coaches can let it go and move on. And I think that's part of the things I still got to work on is don't look back. You know, always be looking forward and how you get your team better.
Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, joining us here on the OG. All right, I'll ask you a specific question now, Rod. Thank you for indulging me there. I will send that clip to Adam Gold. You'll be hearing from him later, I'm sure.
You should have gave me more on where his point was. I didn't quite get it. So
I'll let him, you know, I know you're, you actually do follow some men's basketball. I shouldn't shortchange you there.
Yeah, but I don't get what happened. So what's the issue?
Oh, he was claiming it didn't really matter what Gonzaga would have done on Monday night. Baylor was just the superior team.
Okay.
And my argument was I did not feel like Mark Few had his team prepared to play in the game. Now that doesn't mean just because you're prepared doesn't mean mean you're going to win. I would have rather have seen a better effort from Gonzaga. Either way.
So you're putting it on the coach on that one?
I put the beginning of that game on the coach, yes.
Okay. Well, I got to be honest, I didn't watch the game.
Okay.
So I can't even comment on it. But I always said you prepare your team, and then really the game is on the player.
Sure.
Like you, they got to go play. And at that point, if you're scrambling – and you can run a play here or there. You can drop some, but they should have already done it. So really, you're just rehearsing something that they already know, and you don't even really have to do it. You know what I mean? There's adjustments you make, but if you're making a lot of adjustments in the game, you're probably losing already. So
you said it much better than I could. Rod Brindamore, Carolina Hurricanes, joining us here on the OG. All right, let me ask you a specific hockey question. You're a chance guy. I know you're not necessarily as concerned about goals going up on the score sheet. With Svech, how do you try to get him to concentrate either on his chances, or do you like the way that he's playing even though he's not scoring goals for you right now?
Well, I mean, I am a goals guy. I want to score, but sometimes you could be scoring goals and not playing well. I mean, that happens a lot too. So it's a process. I mean, I think with Svech, you know, he puts a ton of pressure on himself to score, and I think that doesn't help. So by talking about it or making more of you got to score more goals, that doesn't work. You know, it's a process. How are you getting? Are you getting to the net? Are you creating space for yourself? Or are you giving up chances to get chances? That's no good. So it's all that kind of discussions versus, you know, how do you score more goals? You got to do it right. And your goals will come. And he's had his opportunities. I mean, he's been around it. Had a great chance last night in the third, coming down the wing by doing it right, you know, and ripping a shot. So there's things he's doing that are really, you know, positive, and we got to keep working on those, and then take away some of the other stuff. No different than any other player.
Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, joining us on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. You do like goals. You also like making sure that there's no goals scored against you. And Peter Mrazek's return has certainly helped in that regard. So how can we talk about the goalie situation without you getting visibly annoyed? Is that possible?
I mean, I guess I'm going to have to, you know, change my outlook on that when I answer these questions, and I'll put a big smile on my face. And, you know, it's just there's no good answer.
Yeah.
To it, and that's my and for me to give you the I hate giving dull answers, but you know the coach answers, but they're true in this case. I got a tough situation, but it's one of those that you like to have because I have good options, and there's no easy way to do it really. And then I haven't done it before where you have a three goalie situation, and I'm gonna figure it out as we go. I mean, I don't, you know, you don't have this thing planned out because I know that doesn't work either. So, you know, we're in good shape. We've had, you know, Peter's back in the mix. It looks like he's full go now, and you know, we'll monitor it as we go day by day. And that's the honest answer, and that's all as far as I go with it.
Okay, so specific to Peter. It was a long road to get to this point, and these back-to-back starts, he certainly doesn't look like he has any rust. I know he's been conditioning, and he had the conditioning stint in Chicago before he finally got called up. You guys slow walk this. I don't know how you got to that point of slow walking it, but do you feel like that has paid off, given especially the way that Nedeljkovic has stepped up? But I feel like this has paid off to slow walk it.
Well, it has because, you know, we got – you said like Ned got an opportunity, a longer one than we thought he was going to get, and more games, and that's probably helped him. And you know, now by, you know, Peter taking, you know, it took a long time. We thought we'd be back sooner than that.
Right.
It made him not have to worry about any doubt. He took the doubt out, and I think that's really important, especially for a goal. And so he obviously, it was the right move. And you know, he looks like he's healthy and more importantly, confident. And here we are.
Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, joining us on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. All right, so it's an unusual season, so I don't find it unusual to carry three goalies, but I know there's cap considerations, other needs that you would like once the trade deadline arrives. What have the conversations been like with you and the front office related to what this team needs and what you want to do with that situation?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think you're always, you know, there's always something you can get better at. for sure. I think the question is always, oh, you don't want to mess up something to try to get better, and you're not necessarily getting better. You know, the worst thing you can do to me is kind of mess up the – we had a good chemistry in the group, and, I mean, I feel like we have a good team. So how much, you know what I mean? Messing something up here right now, is, unless you know for sure it's going to make you better, is really not the right move. So I don't think there's any huge moves on the horizon. You know, if Donnie gets the call and there's something that makes sense, I'm sure we'll look at it. But at this point, I don't see us doing a heck of a lot.
Rod Brindamore, Carolina Hurricanes, before we let you go, at the risk of answering my own question about coaches and their roles, this is where you basically have to say you're honest, right? Like, that's what the coach's job is, to be honest with your three goalies and all of your players, obviously. But in a situation like this, you just have to be honest with the players and say that this is what I'm doing and this is what we're doing and this is your chance, right? I mean, that's basically what the coach's job is, to explain to everybody, this is what your job is, this is what your role is, right? Like, I'm not hallucinating here.
They don't always agree with you.
Right, but that's the honesty
and, but,
part.
But if they know where you stand or where they stand, then I think everybody can say, okay, you know, I get it. And, you know, that's my approach. You know, I've talked to the three guys. They get it. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, this could all change tomorrow. You know, mm-hmm. that's the thing about, you said this crazy schedule this year. You know, that's why we really don't plan too far ahead, because mm-hmm. there's so many curveballs every day coming. And, you know, let's just plan on being the best we can today, and then let's do it again tomorrow.
Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, we appreciate the time. The home stretch continues. More fans are in the building. That's always good. We'll talk to you later.
You got it. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group hotline from Get Up on ESPN and Greeny, which you can now listen to on 99.9 The Fan from 10 until noon, it's Mike Greenberg. Mike, how are you?
I'm terrific. It's great to be back with you guys. It's great to be back in town. How's everything going?
Everything's great, although you tell us, should we buy Sam Darnold at QB with the Carolina Panthers?
Yes, absolutely. I will tell you right now that Sam Darnold, his 3 years in New York, can only be described as professional sabotage. He had absolutely no chance. The utter dysfunction of the New York Jets organization gave him no opportunity to succeed. So while I cannot promise you he is going to be great, I can promise you that if he can be deprogrammed of all of the nonsense that was the last 3 years for him and revert back to whatever he was as a rookie, as a moldable lump of clay, his abilities, his talents are definitely great enough that with the kind of coaching I believe he will get from Matt Rhule and Joe Brady, I think he has an excellent chance to be a terrific quarterback. And in all honesty, I will be rooting for him, because he did not have any fair chance in New York. Frankly, it was unfair the way things went here, and I will be rooting for him hard in Carolina.
Mike Greenberg joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Mike, do you think the Jets got enough for Sam Darnold? I mean, a second pick and a fourth-round pick?
I do, based upon what it had been reported people were offering. Look, I don't have a problem with the timing, because the Jets, I think, did probably the smart thing, which is I think they could have probably traded Darnold for more if they had done so right at the beginning of free agency or before free agency began, before a lot of other teams made their decisions, before the Bears signed Andy Dalton and before the Colts traded for Carson Wentz and whatever other deals have been made. You could have just sort of played one off or off another and probably gotten more for him. Mm-hmm. But I don't mind that the Jets didn't do that, because I think it does, for a change, demonstrate that the people in charge have some idea what they were doing, which is to say they recognize that Darnold has ability that this team has not taken advantage of, and they needed to go get a good look, a full look at the quarterbacks they may draft to make better than Sam. And I don't even know that they had to conclude that Zach Wilson is better than Sam as much as they had to conclude that it was pretty close to a tie. Mm-hmm. Because in this case, the tie, as you guys know, goes to the rookie contract, and that's what they'll be able to have now, their quarterback on a rookie deal for the next few years. as opposed to Sam, who you will have to pay much sooner. So I understand why the timing of it went as it did. And when you consider that, and when you consider how few teams were out there probably interested, I think all things considered, the Jets did pretty well in the trade.
Mike Greenberg, ESPN, Get Up on TV. Greeny, now on 99.9 The Fan from 10 until noon. So look, you know that we've been having these conversations for a long time. You know I consume a lot of ESPN, so I can only imagine what it's like for you, who's actually in charge of this content, where we go from last year, Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence being the debate, like whoever's going to get Justin Fields will have a good enough quarterback as well. Maybe even Justin Fields goes number one, right? To, what is he, the fourth, the fifth quarterback that people are talking about right now? I don't understand the disconnect when I watch you guys talk about this on Get Up, where people seem to like Justin Fields, but NFL teams have soured on him. What's going on here?
I don't know. I've been trying to get the answer to that question for quite some time now, and I can't do it. Here's what you're talking about, for those who haven't seen it. Every analyst I have on my television show, so Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, Matt Miller, and then all the former players, Dan Orlovsky, Booger McFarland, Marcus Spears, on and on it goes. They will all begin every sentence by saying, Justin Fields is my number two quarterback in this draft. I think he's the second best quarterback in this draft. They will all say that. And yet, every mock draft that I see has him fifth among the quarterbacks in the first round. Now, you still got to get drafted high. He could be drafted number eight overall, which in any normal year you'd say, wow, okay, it's a very high draft pick for a quarterback. But when you're the fifth quarterback off the board, there's no question that there's a chip on the shoulder. What the reason is, I can't get straight. I cannot get anyone to explain to me why it is that someone is going to take Mac Jones, who projects, I think, to be the next Kirk Cousins, ahead of Justin Fields, who projects, I think, to be the next Dak Prescott. I don't think anyone watching football right now wouldn't rather have Dak Prescott or someone like that than Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is a perfectly serviceable quarterback that you can win games with. But Justin Fields, I think, has a ceiling that is much higher than that. So if you've got a coaching staff that you think can do a great job of developing quarterbacks, as they do in Carolina and as they do in San Francisco, then I would take Justin Fields for sure. I actually think the most interesting scenario here is one that I'm sure you guys have considered, and that is, should Justin Fields fall to eight, do the Panthers take him? Despite having traded what they did for Sam yesterday, or 2 days ago now. I think that is a really fascinating question. And Mike Tannenbaum came on the TV show and said that if he's Carolina, he does it. He doesn't trade up for him anymore. But if he falls to him, you do it. And you let the chips fall where they may, and if the biggest problem you have is that you have two good quarterbacks, that's a great problem to have. And my response to that is, that may be true, but it is still a problem. So it's a complicated one, and I'll be interested to see how that goes. But I think there's a real chance that Justin Fields will be on the board when the Panthers pick at eight, and the decision of whether or not to take him will be a fascinating one.
Mike Greenberg joining us here on the OG. Mike, I've been listening to you, Greeny, 10 to noon right here on 99.9 The Fan. You've been talking about how you're going to host the NFL draft. And I was curious how you go about preparing for that. I've heard some of your segments, but I'm sure behind the scenes you've been crunching a little bit of film.
Oh, yeah. So what I decided to do is I try and do some players every single day. I want to have a general working knowledge. I'm doing the first 2 days, so that's three rounds. So I want to have a general working knowledge of something in the neighborhood of 10 players who are likely to be drafted in the first three rounds. So for each of those players, I've done 73 of them so far. I take the player, I read up, I just set aside, each player takes me about a half hour. I go through each player, I go through notes, I read as many articles as I can find, and then what I have found to my delight is that on YouTube there are clips of every single one of these players.
Of course.
And so I usually watch, 5-10 minutes of film on each one. I don't need to be able to break down the film. That's not my job on the draft. Lewis Riddick can do that, and Booger can do that. And
you got to be careful with those mixtapes, though, Greeny. Here in high school basketball country, we know you got to be careful with those mixtapes.
Of course. I mean, when you watch those tapes, every one of them look like they're going to be the greatest player in NFL history. But I don't need to make a value judgment. All I need to be able to do is have a working knowledge of, generally speaking, who is this person? Who am I talking about? What does he look like? What does it look like when he plays? What, you know, those kinds of things. So I am doing all of that, and I should have all of my players done. We're 3 weeks out right now. I'm hoping to have all the players done a week before the draft. And then I'll spend that last week diving into the teams and their needs and you know, what we should expect there. And because I need to have a working knowledge of everything that's happening. But at the end of the day, my job is to be the host. My job is not to deliver all this information, because no one is tuning in that night to hear what I think of any of it. My job is to make sure I facilitate as well as can be done, that information comes to you from the people that you want to hear it from. So from Mel Kiper, whose name is synonymous with the draft, from Lewis Riddick, who knows as much about personnel and team building as anyone, and from Booger, who is a dear friend of mine and who's an awesome football analyst who I think will have a great big picture perspective on how all of these picks impact the league. So that's my job. So I will have a working knowledge of all of the players and all of the teams, but I think that's just sort of to have in my piggy bank. But my job that night is to run point, and hopefully I will do that. If you walk away from it thinking, boy, I got so much out of that, I really feel like I know exactly what happened, and I got a ton of opinion, and I got a ton of insight, and I can't even remember who the host was anymore, but it was an awesome show, then I will have done my job. That is, I believe that's the role of the host of the NFL draft, and that's what I'm going to go in there and try and do.
I just hope they give you a Jets corner moment. That's all I ask for on the broadcast.
You know, let's see what happens. All right. Number two. I mean, there's no mystery in it.
No, there's not. There's not.
We know what they're doing, and you know, I don't know what you think. I mean, I think I'm generally in favor of it. I mean, I would have been in favor of trading the second pick for three ones and a three or something like that. And
look, just don't say anything that's going to get your daughter to roast you on Twitter like she did the other day.
She's do you know that my daughter began? So I didn't allow my kids to be on Twitter. When they lived in my house, or my daughter anyway. She's now in her second year of college. She went on Twitter because a bunch of her friends are on Twitter. She had 77 followers on Twitter. And she started posting stuff making fun of me, and I thought it was funny, so I would retweet it. And the next thing I know, she had a tweet earlier this week that has 21,600 likes, which has got to be... She calls me up and she says, "Dad, if you click on the name Darnold was the number one trending topic, and if you click on it, the first tweet that comes up is Adam Schefter, and the second one is me," which is the funniest thing. My daughter is 20 years old and knows far less about football than literally any person paying attention to this conversation right now, and yet everyone, look at this. It just goes to show you the world never gets tired of having fun at my expense.
I think it's a relatable moment where your kids roast you, because I know I've been roasted by my 13-year-old about some of the things that I've said on the air. So it's a very relatable thing. Mike, we appreciate the time. Awesome to have you on 99.9 The Fan from 10 to noon, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the draft.
It's great to be back. I'll see you guys soon. Thanks.
Wes Durham, he's joining us now. ACC.
How's it
Network.
Going?
Good, man.
This would be an appropriate time to tell you that within the hour, I have been on a Zoom with Tim Beck, Tony Gibson, and Dave Doran getting ready for the red and white game on Saturday at Carter-Finley Stadium. So we can talk about that.
So who calling the spring game?
We are calling it. Roddy Jones and I will have the spring game.
Oh, the dream team now together.
I will actually watch
together.
Now.
Together where?
Well, you're going to be doing this virtually, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bummer. Yeah, that's a bummer.
I'll be there on Saturday. I'm going over there.
So who's the starting quarterback then?
I think Devin Leary's going to get that first snap on Saturday, Joe, just in case.
Just in case?
Well, I mean, Devin Leary's going to quarterback NC State. What are we talking about?
Well, I mean,
now, they've got some guys that aren't going to play, but Devin Leary's going to play.
Yeah, I mean, but there was a curiosity in the offseason.
Way?
Well, the new guy,
that Tim McLaughlin.
Aaron McLaughlin.
Oh, Aaron McLaughlin from Denmark High School in Alpharetta, Georgia?
Yeah. From your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a talented kid. He's big. He's 6'5" and a half and 230. But he no. Devin Leary's the quarterback at NC State now. Come on, don't do this in April. Come on.
I'll do whatever the hell I want to.
Whoa.
Whoa. What was I gonna say?
Feisty.
Fired up. Obvious, fired up.
I'm ready for the football season, man.
Well, just ask him who his master's pick is, Wes. That'll get him going.
He's got Angel Cabrera. Packers. Packers evil twin.
Yeah,
Angel
Cabrera. I was going to say Packer and Angel.
Have you ever seen the picture of those two together?
I have never seen them together.
Not while I have water in my mouth, please.
I will text you one.
Wait, do you actually have a photo of them together?
Yeah, we did a split screen of it last year.
Oh man, no! I need them in the same golf course at the same time.
Picture. No, we don't. I tweeted it to somebody yesterday.
Okay, yeah, I didn't see it because I mean Packer's a golfer, you know.
Former golfer. Yes.
Well, he doesn't golf anymore.
No, he hasn't played in 23 years.
What is it with the Packer family that when they're done with something, they're done with something?
They're done.
Because like Billy,
man's got to live by a code.
Like I joked about this on Monday night. Can we get Billy Packer to zoom in to call this one over?
Golly, no.
But kidding. You know Billy ain't doing that.
No. Billy was on our show last Friday. He was good.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, so about the Masters.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just gonna. Jillio's really, really hankering to talk about the Masters today, and I'm like, you ain't getting that from me.
All right.
So I'll let you two. I mean, what am I watching for? There's no Tiger. Tiger did release a statement today saying, you know, he's doing well and the L.A. Police Department has closed the investigation into his car accident. So that story seems to have come to a close.
He's doing 85 and a 45, apparently.
Who hasn't?
Okay.
I got pulled over for that once.
If you're asking me who I'm looking for at Augusta,
yeah,
I tend to go right below the, like, prohibitive favorites. So I'm probably not your Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, DeChambeau guy. I might be your Colin Morikawa, Cameron Smith, you know, type guy, Tommy Fleetwood type guy, because I think there are definitely players for this golf course and there are players not for this golf course. And until I see him do it, I have a hard time believing DeChambeau can do it, especially as fast as this golf course is going to play. You know, I think there are guys like Kuchar who typically plays well at Augusta. Somehow or another, you always find Zach Johnson in the top 20 at Augusta.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's certain guys who you don't know if they'll win, but they'll be around on Saturday or Sunday and within, you know, three, four, five shots. The real question I have is it going to rain there? Because rain tends to change the personality of the golf course a little bit this time of year. We had no idea what it would do in November. But I think it's fast and it's firm, and I'm really, really interested to see what the scores look like tomorrow right out of the gate, because I think it's an entirely different golf course than the one they saw in November.
Wes Durham, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG. And, yeah, Wes, I thought in November Dustin Johnson just kind of made a mockery of it, 20 under for the whole week.
Yeah.
I suspect it'll be a little bit more difficult this week than it was in November, don't you?
I think it'll be a lot more difficult.
Okay.
November's not their time. I mean, they typically close the golf course. They open it. I mean, they close the golf course the first week in May, and they don't open it again until October-ish. And they really don't play much there until after the new year. But I think, you know, obviously they did what they had to do. That's why I think the personality of the golf course will be completely different. I think you'll be back to, you know, trying to stop it on a dinner plate type Augusta greens. I think it'll play a lot longer. There's some course maintenance they've done to extend it. We'll see what that means when we finally get a look at the whole golf course at some point. And I think that's the trick to winning there. I think you've got to have some degree of experience. Very few guys show up first time and walk out of there with the coat.
Isn't the biggest get in ACC media this week to get Roy Williams to give his preview for the Masters, having just played it before
he
retired?
He just did it. He just did it last Thursday. He told you what he did.
No, see, to me, that was more of a brag. You know, he shot 88, 87, talked about where he parred and things like that. I need a full-on breakdown from Roy Williams.
Didn't he say he parred 13, 14, 15, 17, and 18?
I think that's what he did, yes.
And he, so that means he...
It means he was bad on the front.
He bogeyed the par 3-16th. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, that'd be a good get, no question. Because he likes to talk it now.
I mean, I know.
I've been around him where it's pretty intense about, hey, look, you know, he's got his favorite golf courses. We got into that conversation one time about places he plays on a regular basis that are his favorites and places he's been to a couple different times, things like that.
Do you think Roy Williams will get so bored around here that he'll go to a golf course that you wouldn't expect to see him? Like, can you see Roy Williams at RGA?
Hey, that's where I had my hole-in-one.
Hey, see? Good memories there.
31 years ago.
Oh, wow. Jeez, yeah. Wes.
With my high school, one of my best friends from high school, Chris Majewski.
Seeing Roy Williams pull up at Knights
at RGA, playing the Stockholders Nine. They still have the Stockholders Nine at RGA. That's where I had. Yeah,
they do.
By the way,
I played them recently.
Yeah,
you think he'll go to Wilmar before it shuts down? Nah, Wilmar. Probably not.
How about Devil's Ridge, Jillio? Think he rolls out there one day? Is Devil's Ridge still a golf course? It's there, right?
What's
it called? Something
track.
Ridge, Devil's something or another. It's out in Cary.
Yes, I know.
Holly Springs,
about.
Apex Macedonia Road, out there where I used to live at the crib.
Crib.
West Durham. ACC Network joining us here.
Kildare Farm Road. I was off the crib at Kildare and Cary Parkway right there, Castlewood Drive. Some of you folks are riding by it right now going, damn, Durham used to live down that street. That's exactly right. Third house on the right. So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Were you surprised at all today, tangentially related to the ACC? Sean Miller's ouster at Arizona?
No, not at all. I think that one's been on a time. I think that clock's been ticking a while. I think it was just a matter of how they could make it happen and, you know, how little money did they have to spend in order to get it done.
Oh, down to the 1 year on the contract. I got you.
Yeah, I think it was just to say, hey, what can we do to get out from underneath this cloud anvil that ultimately will get us?
Would you like to break news on the OG?
Would I?
Yeah.
About what?
Well, you could text them right now. Is Pastner a candidate for Arizona?
It's a really good question. And Roddy Jones and I were eating lunch with Brandon Gaudin, who works for FS1 and used to do Georgia Tech as well. And we were talking, actually, about Pastner today for Sean Miller's job. And I don't know. Josh has done such a good job in Atlanta, and I think but it is his alma mater. He does have a passion for the place. He had an unbelievable relationship, obviously, with Lute Olson. I guess it's possible, but, you know, I'm not real sure what they're thinking in Tucson. You know, do you want to go back to somebody tied to Lute? Is it similar pedigree to what we saw at Carolina this week, that kind of thing? I don't know that about Arizona. But certainly his name's going to come up, and it should. He's done a really nice job at Georgia Tech. But I'll say this too. He's got a chance to get a lot of these guys back for that extra year. Usher's already said he's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
DeVoe's name's in the draft. He's not signing with an agent. And I've been told if he's not a first-round guy, which I don't think he is, then he'll come back. I think Moses Wright's on the – I think he's got a chance at being a first-round guy. But I don't know that, you know, if that's his only caveat. And then I think there's a legitimate chance Alvarado comes back. So, I mean, Josh could come back to a very, very good team in Atlanta this year.
I thought Alvarado already announced he was coming back.
Did he confirm that? Okay.
Yeah, I thought, you know how it is. Things have just kind of all run together here after a while because there's so much to keep track of with player movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we can kind of get to that with Hubert Davis and Walker Kessler.
That was pretty interesting.
Right. I mean, there was a lot of interesting things that were said from Hubert Davis yesterday. I chalked up a lot of what he said to be catnip for Carolina fans. And that's great. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do in an introductory press conference. But in terms of actual news that might have emerged from the press conference itself was Hubert Davis saying that Walker Kessler is a Carolina guy and that he's, I guess, re-recruiting him. So I don't know how that's going to play out.
I don't know that any of us know how it's going to play out because I don't know that any of us really know the reasoning for going into the portal.
Yeah.
And if we knew more of that, then we might have an insight as to what might ultimately, you know, be determined by Walker and his family. I personally think he is a really good fit at Carolina. I think Hubert Davis was exactly right. He's a Carolina guy. He's a guy, and I don't know what you guys talked about. He's a guy that I could see getting better every year he stayed in Chapel Hill, to the point where he would be, you know, one of those guys you'd be thinking about in the Luka Garza type mold, right? The same way I feel about Walker Kessler is the exact same way I feel about Mark Williams at Duke. I felt like they got better as the year went on. I've had former coaches and current coaches head scratch the Walker Kessler into the portal thing. I mean, they were like, I don't get it. And so I don't know, again, what the landscape was. I don't know if it's possible he'll come back. I thought Armando Bacot, you know, gave himself the out to come back. I think that was important for Hubert Davis. I thought it was ironic that that came not long after the press conference, right, yesterday. So we'll see how that plays out. You get Kessler back, you get Bacot back to go along with, I don't think, is Caleb Love's coming back? Is R.J. Davis?
He was coming back, but that was before Roy decided to retire. But my guess is that players might have had an inclination as to what was going on.
Sure. And maybe Kessler wants to see how the staff thing gets about. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of balls in the air, but what is it? They've got 8 or 9 guys on scholarship right now, 8. They're going to have to do some work transactionally from the portal or grad transfer or whatever, in addition to, is it Dunn and Styles, the two kids who signed there already in the fall, I guess.
Wes Durham, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. All right, last thing before we say goodbye, and Giglio actually brought this up when we were processing the Sean Miller outing at Arizona.
Okay.
If I'm Jeff Capel and I see this, I'm probably thinking, pressure's on. I mean, they've had what's funny about Jeff Capel at Pitt is that they've had some interesting starts, and they look like a team that might be somewhat dangerous, but they've fizzled and they've had some more exits there. I mean, which is the nature of college basketball, but if I'm Capel, I might be a little concerned.
I don't know. I'd be concerned about Sean Miller.
I mean, go home, that sort of thing.
We're going to probably have to take a couple years off though, Joe.
In what sense?
Well,
because of the show cause?
Yeah.
I mean, Kansas just gave Bill Self a contract for life, and he's going to have a show cause.
Okay. That's Kansas. It's not Pittsburgh.
All right. So I mean, what do you think the Miller brothers do? Podcast for the Ringer?
Ask Giglio. He's close. He knows. He's got a better relationship with him than I do. All I got was the how you doing. That's what I told you guys. Right, Giglio? I mean, I just got the how you doing from the little guy. Not E. Karaturbe or, you know, whoever the other guard from Turkey was. They got dunked on. Inganatsur. Oh, yeah, it wasn't Inganatsur. It was Archie gave me the how you doing. Okay. Okay, good. Yeah. Nice. Really, right, don't wear out that Chamber of Commerce, you know, approach.
What's your master's plan for tomorrow? Show's over and you're just hunkering down?
It'll be a little bit of a workout. Still working on that post-COVID endurance factor. Yeah. The show. Charlie Reimer on the show tomorrow, Giglio, to help us with some of our Masters picks.
Giglio's making a face.
Nice.
You know, Georgia Tech guy, ACC connection. So Charlie will join us. But, a little prep on the spring game for NC State, red and white on Saturday.
All right. You can catch Packer and Durham on Buzz Sports Radio from 10 until noon.
Pack is telling folks now about it.
Oh, really?
Packer and Durham available on some stations in the ACC footprint. And as I said, always check your local listings.
Oh, geez. Okay. What do we got to do? Is there like a, you know, because oftentimes, you know, in the radio business, like there's a little bit of trade that it takes place to make sure that the stations get named on the national level?
I'm not sure how that works out in this arrangement, man. Okay. Look, we got the call. We were just told, hey, by the way, the show's going to re-air in a couple of different markets and be offered to others. And apparently it's been picked up in other markets to be announced at a later date.
I just feel like we're more special than other markets.
Dude, with me, you guys are it. I'm in.
Packer's still not over my appearances on the old terrestrial radio show that you used to do.
Oh, jeez. Great.
All right.
All right, Wes. Talk to you soon. Be well. Giglio, enjoy the tournament. I know you'll get a lot of activity with Ovius the next couple of days.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
It's the OG.
Joe Talks Golf.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group hotline, NJ.com, the Star Ledger columnist, Steve Politta. He's in Augusta for the Masters. Steve, how are you?
I'm great, Joe. I'm great. How you doing?
Well, how you feeling after a Waffle House run?
I tell you, that was the most exciting thing when you get down here. You know, obviously we don't have them in New Jersey, so went right to it. Got to the Atlanta airport, got in the car, drove about a half an hour. You know, you'd be surprised. I found one pretty quickly.
It was shocking. Like, you know, in Georgia, shocking, there's a Waffle House in Georgia. What did you order?
I got the All Star breakfast with the waffle, the hash browns. I get my hash browns normal. I don't want all the crap in it, and bacon and eggs. You know, scrambled the whole thing. It was delicious.
Now you got to go smothered and covered on the hash browns. Come on now.
I don't need the smother. I don't. They're good on their own. They're just, you know, why mess with something like that?
Fair enough. All right, so you're at the Masters. You weren't there in November because things were a little bit different, as we were with the pandemic. I don't think we understood what that tournament was going to be like, but you're there now. And I guess this is feeling more like a normal sporting event for you with the Masters getting ready to get fired up.
It's normaler. I don't think it's normal. I mean, if you go out here, if you've been here before, and this, I think this will be my 18th one. I mean, it's just they have let people into the course, but it's just so spread out there. I would estimate that it's probably 15-20% of the normal crowd. So you walk around, you feel like, you know, you feel like you've got exclusive view on everything you normally can't get. There's no grandstands, so you know you can have different vantage points on the course you didn't have before. So yeah. It's certainly not the normal Augusta National and Masters. So even one of the traditions, like you know, the famous thing, people hustle in with their chairs to set them up at the 18th green and leave them there for the day. They're not letting you do that anymore because I think of, you know, because of the COVID restrictions, they want people to maintain their 6 feet apart. So yeah, it's not quite normal yet.
Steve Politta, NJ.com, joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Obvious. I'm Joe Giglio. All right, you wrote about Tiger Woods today, and I have a sense, you know, just hearing Justin Thomas talk about him and his relationship and just the different players, that he's really become a popular player, which amongst his peers, which we couldn't have said, you know, 15, 20 years ago when he was really running roughshod over everyone. What is your sense in talking to players and how they feel about playing in Augusta where Tiger's had so much success?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. It's a very interesting dynamic that all of these guys, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, I mean, they all live in Florida, and they all went to visit Tiger at his house and talk him and give him pep talk and cheer him up. And, you know, I think that is an interesting dynamic. You know, I think they're pulling for him to get back out here. And, I mean, certainly, you know, you're right, 20 years ago to think that, you know, think that would be the case, the way he was isolated purposely away from the rest of the players and sort of kept them at arm's length and part of his mystique and aura and, you know, the way he carried himself. But now that's absolutely different thing now. And I think it's cool. And I believe that these guys, you know, they admire him. They see him as the reason that they're all filthy rich. And they genuinely like him now. You know, and I think you saw that when he won in 2019, the way a lot of these guys were really taken by it. And we're glad to be on the course that day.
Steve Politta, he's at the Masters this week for NJ.com. Check him out there. Check him out on the Twitters. Steve, Joe doesn't like to talk about golf, so if you'll indulge me here for a second. DJ won this thing kind of easily in November, but he was really playing well last year going into the Masters. He has not been playing well lately, but where do you see his form? And then, you know, someone who is red hot is Jordan Spieth, who on the list of mantles of next Tigers or next golf stars, Jordan Spieth's taking a detour. But how do you see those two players who are kind of in different directions right now heading into Augusta?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think we put a lot, almost too much sometimes into how a guy's playing coming into this place. And, you know, even Justin Thomas said it. He was in a bad place heading into the Players and, you know, didn't have a lot of confidence, didn't have his game, and he won. You know, so you never have an idea how it suddenly something clicks when they're out there on the second hole and they start stringing together birdies and, you know, it happens. But I do think that there's a reason that Dustin Johnson is not the prohibitive favorite, but the favorite, just the way he destroyed that course last year. Every time he plays it, I would be stunned if he is not on the leaderboard, even if he's playing poorly. Spieth is a more interesting, you know, more interesting case. You know, the fact he won in Houston, that was his first time in, you know, almost 4 years, which is kind of unthinkable when you watch the early part of his career.
He can, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's just so, you know, he's had so much problems with, you know, with his iron play and his ball striking, and finally he seems to be improving in that category. I will be interested to see how he does with this course if it's playing as fast as they expect it will play. I think that's going to be a big equalizer for the guys who can hit longer, like DeChambeau and Johnson and John Rahm and Rory. So I wouldn't list him in my speech as my top, you know, five or six guys to win it, but certainly, you know, he has to be encouraged by the way he's playing.
All right, before Joe Ovia squeezes in a Sam Darnold story, I got one more golf question for Steve Politi from the Star Ledger in New Jersey, NJ.com. He's down covering the Masters in Augusta. DeChambeau was beaten by Bernard Langer the last time they were at Augusta.
Yeah.
So for that reason, people have kind of cooled on Bryson. But when he won at the Arnold Palmer, you kind of saw what he can do with his length. Augusta has been Tiger-proofed, but I don't think it has been DeChambeau-proofed. What do you see from Bryson? And speaking of guys who are who have been in pretty good form, he has been playing pretty well.
Yeah, let's face it. A lot of people have been beaten by Bernard Langer here.
Yes,
so
yes.
Even in his 60s, that dude can still tee it up and get from knows the course better than nearly everyone who's out there now. Yeah, I mean, I think that what happened with him, you know, I wasn't here, but I watched a lot of it last year. It just seems like DeChambeau made every mistake that he could make. It just didn't play well. Didn't have it dialed in. I think he will be, you know, if I had to pick a guy to win it this year, the guy who would be most likely to win multiple ones at this point, it would be him, just because of that length. You know, this is not a course that punishes you. If you hit it long and you hit it a little wide, you can recover from a lot of different places. And he still hasn't played this place a lot. You got to remember that. So I think having that experience and the fact that it's going to be a harder test this year than it certainly was when the course was soft in November. Yeah, I like his chances a lot this week, and I like his chances, you know, for going forward for the next decade.
Steve Politi, NJ.com, joining us on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. See, without Brooks Koepka, who's like the only dude that I like now, because
he's hobbled.
Yeah. So I don't think people are going to expect much out of Brooks Koepka. So look, all the names that you and Giglio have referenced, like these are all names I think most even casual sports fans have heard of, because this is the core group of golfers that's getting it done.
Yep.
But who's the new young guy? Who is the new person that, I don't know, could surprise somebody that hasn't been mentioned yet at the Masters?
Yeah, I mean, you know, guys like Colin Morikawa, who won the PGA, would be someone who I would put on that list. I would tell you who I'd love to see win would be Cameron Smith,
okay.
Because I don't know if you're following what's going on down here with the Georgia voting laws, and Augusta National was asked to, you know, the chairman Fred Ridley was asked to make a statement about that.
Do people understand how Augusta works?
Yes, I know, of course.
Anyway, that stuff bothers me. It's like, what did you expect from Augusta?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm editorializing now. But anyway,
but Champ, I mean, give him credit for he's been very outspoken about it. So I mean, mm-hmm. You got to love the fact that he's willing to speak and come out and take a stand. It'd be kind of a cool story if you want it. I don't know if he will win it.
Okay, Steve Politi, columnist, NJ.com, Star Ledger. All right, we talked to ESPN's Mike Greenberg earlier, and he's a big Jets fan. And he is convinced that Sam Darnold was a victim of just poor – it's the Jets. Just as simple as that. It's the Jets' fault, and that he has an opportunity now with the Panthers. I don't know if I buy that. What do you feel? How do you feel about Darnold and his potential?
I certainly agree that the Jets did him no favors with the supporting cast they surrounded him. But, you know, at a certain point, I mean, it's not like he had a half a year and a half. I mean, you know, we've seen 4 years of Sam Darnold, and eventually you are what you are. You know, I mean, this is the player he is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, you know, I think he had decision-making processes, problems. He had accuracy problems. And he would make some throws just from a technical standpoint. When you're watching him, you're like, Who taught him that? You know, back leg, off balance, you know, art, just the whole. I mean, and this, you don't have to be someone who, you know, like Peyton Manning to be able to break down and look at the just look at his mechanics and say something wasn't right. So look, I mean, I understand what the Panthers are doing. I think they're taking a chance on a guy with a lot of talent and who, you know, obviously, you're right, didn't have a supporting cast here, never had a true number one receiver. Never had, you know, a running game. Never had an offensive line that could block for him. Never had a good coach. There's a million things you never had here. But that said, I totally understand why the Jets decided to move on from him and start over with someone else.
Steve Politi, NJ.com, Star Ledger columnist. We appreciate the time. Enjoy some more Waffle House this week.
There you go. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you guys.
It's time to play You're Full of Shit, Giglio. Listen, I've known Joe has been full of shit since 1975, so this is old news to me. Here's Joe Ovius with the rules, but I can already tell you, Giglio is definitely full of shit, and I should know, I'm his mother.
You good over there?
I'm contemplating an interactive You're Full of It.
Oh, boy. Well, they're always interactive. What are you talking about?
No, with you.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see. All right, we got two contestants, and one of them is going to correctly call Giglio out on his BS. He's got some fun facts, or does he? We got Andy in Raleigh. Andy, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
We're good, man. We're good. Thanks for listening. Eric in Raleigh, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Can either of you see out your window with all the pollen?
Barely.
Okay, yeah, it's pretty bad. It's brutal today, man. All right, so Giglio is going to say something that may be true, maybe not be true. If you think you made it up, just shout out your name and Nora's going to do the rest.
You're full of s***, Giglio.
If you're right and you made it up, you'll get a $20 gift card to the original Flying Burrito. If you are incorrect, then it goes to the other guy. Giglio, let's go.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
All right. Joe Ovius can name five of the top 10 golfers in the world golf rankings.
Andy. You're full of s***, Giglio.
Who said that?
It was Andy.
Andy. All right, let's see if he can do
it,
Andy.
Oh, you put
it
on me?
Let's see if he can do it.
So five of the top 10?
Five of the top 10. I got the list right in front of me.
Let's go Jordan Spieth.
Nope.
Bryson DeChambeau?
I'll give you three strikes. DeChambeau, yes.
All right. Rory McIlroy.
No. Two strikes.
Come
on, you know the number one player in the world.
The number one player in the world?
He won the Masters.
Dustin Johnson.
It was Dustin Johnson?
Yeah, you got two.
All right.
Two names, two strikes.
Bubba Watson.
No, strike three.
What?
Yeah.
I'm just naming golfers at this point.
Andy. Andy, congratulations. Good for you betting against Ovius and his golf knowledge. You got yourself a $20 gift card to the original Flying Burrito. Go check him out. Flying Mine downtown, man. Wednesday night's actually trivia night. Go check out our friend Jason.
Yeah. It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Well, boys.
What you got cooked up?
Obviously, Gonzaga broke lots of people's hearts, but most importantly, our beloved Giglio.
Oh, man.
And so I was thinking today and brainstorming with the aforementioned Giglio after he was beating me in Tecmo Bowl. About what to sing, and I was going to sing Linkin Park in the end. I was going to.
How can you sing angry? There's no possible way you're capable of singing
I could work
angry.
On it. I'm a thespian. Uh-huh. I can do these things. But Giglio pointed me towards another Linkin Park song with our guy, Jay-Z.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah.
At least.
Oh, yeah.
We don't need an encore, don't want to watch no more. Try to implore, now get off the floor. That's the very last time I pick you for sure. Now what the hell were you waiting for? Go ahead, Mark Few, we closed that door. Who had more talents than Zag? Riddle me that. Monday night trying to figure where y'all at. In that game, you can't come out flat. Check the stats. Out here looking like an undefeated doormat. Been picking you guys in the bracket for years. But 2 minutes in, you brought me to tears. Timmy bullied in the post. Watch the dust clear. Your mustache, Shelly, we don't want that here. Saw next year's odds and I shook with fear. Wrote a letter to myself with rules to adhere. Yep. Grand opening, grand closing. To begin, I ain't making that same mistake again. Don't matter which region you're in. This was the last straw, my patience was thin. Sorry, Mikey and Bayonne, too much chagrin. My Zaga love has finally come to an end. We don't need an encore, don't wanna watch no more. Try to implore, now get off the floor. That's the very last time I pick you for sure.
Got a Mikey and Bayonne shout out.
Wow, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
What do you think, Giglio?
Good work, bro.
Thanks. Sorry, Mikey and Bam.
It's okay.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m. and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.